folks. Thanks for tuning in to another fun, packed episode of Owen Explains It All. And just one second while I play our invigorating theme music. Oh, yeah. And the star of the show, Owen Casey Stevens. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, folks. I'm pretty good. It's been a wild few weeks in more ways than one. So I feel like I'm on a multiple day exhale, and then I will try and figure out what I'm tackling next.
Yeah, there has been a lot going on. We could take a whole half hour just talking about all the things that have happened in the RPG sphere in the last couple of weeks. So, oh, hey, what's that shirt you're wearing? Oh, hey, what's that mug?
Got done.
Yeah, that deserves a whole show. That just isn't this show. But it is delightful that Paizo did take the action to actually officially recognize voluntarily the Paizo Workers Union. So, but what we're here to talk about is Dune. And most specifically, the most recent Dune. But I don't want to be too limiting, right? So the David Lynch Dune, the sci-fi miniseries Dune and its sequels, the book Dune, I think those are all things that have value. And in some cases, they've got different things of value. And especially when you are being inspired to take stuff to a role-playing game, such as Starfinder, I think there is absolutely no reason to limit yourself to, I just want to borrow things from this version of this property. This Dune, the most recent version, and David Lynch's Dune, in my opinion, are both gorgeous visual representations of a very gothic, very colonialized version of science fiction. And that goes very well with the themes and the societies that they are portraying. But it means that they look and feel very, very different from Star Wars or Star Trek or despite having Dave Bautista, Guardians of the Galaxy. So even just that can be useful. Even just saying, hey, what do sci-fi warriors look like? What are the terms? What is the aesthetic? If you're walking down the street, what do you see? I think it's super helpful to look at a bunch of different sources with different aesthetics and going for a different feel to borrow things for your campaign. Especially in Starfinder, where you can have lots and lots and lots of different worlds, right? If you have very specifically been playing in the Pact Worlds a lot and people go to the Vescarium, you can, you know, talk about the fact that there is a military statue on every city block, and almost all the buildings have no windows on the lower two floors because that makes them more defensible if the city is ever invaded. And then go the other side and say, oh, and by the way, right, there are little cubicles to sleep in where you can just roll in and go to sleep, and you don't have to get a hotel room because the Vescarium controls everything and likes to keep things quiet and peaceful, so they just put shelters up as a means to control the population, if nothing else. So having a lot of different things you can borrow from can be a great way to say, hey, the Pact Worlds are this hodgepodge and a lot of different cultures, and they're all put together. The Vescarium have very specifically pressed Vesk aesthetics on everything. And then you can go to the Aeon Empire, and the Aeon Throne might have a very magical feeling where, you know, everyone pays the extra 50 credits for their chairs to float instead of having legs, because if you have to have your chair actually sit on the ground, what kind of unmagic peasant are you? The David Lynch version, still, in my opinion, it is for me a great example of a adaptation that makes a good but unfaithful movie. It is very unfaithful from the original material. And I know there are a lot of people that think it starts great and sort of ends in a giant steaming pile. But I think even as a complete movie, especially when you consider that it covers twice as much material as the most recent movie in the same amount of time, and with no less care given to characterization, and most of the special effects hold up really well, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I think it's really impressive.
And its cast was just insane. Even for its time, the cast was insane.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people are just legends now.
And, you know, some of the special effects are a little iffier. Some of the body horror stuff is, in my opinion, completely unnecessary. But those were choices, and strong choices can lead to a strong overall aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But obviously, for most people, the big parts of Dune are things like the spice and the Bene Gesserit and the voice. I love the crossover by having Captain Picard in it. Yeah, you think of him as Captain Picard. I think of him as a Knight of the Round Table from Excalibur, right? So
yeah,
Patrick Stewart's been around.
Yeah. No, that Excalibur was the first place I saw him too. So yeah, I'm right there with you. But yeah, Dune was one of those hugely influential movies for me. My father ran a video rental business as a side gig while I was a child, and so I got to see all sorts of movies when I was a kid, and Dune was one of those movies. You know, being a science fiction nerd, I watched this movie so many times, so I got to, so I easily started to understand, and with the many watchings and rewatchings, understood its world, its society, its politics. So it became one of those really amazing series for me. So I knew the characters, I knew their motivations. And yeah, it is just so iconic and interesting how they set up the entire galaxy, that all of their society depends on this one planet. And that could make for a very interesting and very dangerous story element in a Starfinder game.
I mean, there are a lot of parallels, obviously, with the need for oil to make fossil fuels in the 60s and 70s, and the very fact that they use spice, right? You can go back to looking at the saffron trade or the Silk Route in the old ancient world of Earth, that there is a lot of very important power that comes from money and controlling the ability to produce it. And that can open up a whole set of plot lines. One of the things that I sometimes use as a comparison is that at its core, when you skip the eugenics and the messianic stuff, the universe of Dune is a universe that is being driven by trade disagreements and how those fuel politics, which is exactly what the opening crawl of The Phantom Menace tries to set up for The Phantom Menace, the first of the Star Wars prequels. And while it all feels very natural and normal and reasonable in Dune, it all feels like a really herky, ill-thought-out mess in The Phantom Menace. So if you are a game master or if you're a game writer and you're trying to create a world and you want to look at how do official power, hard power, and soft power, and deals, and betrayal, how does real politic come into play? Apparently, all of our Rebel Arms Facebook posts are being translated in Spanish.
We are big in Puerto Rico. It's a strange thing.
Really?
No, I'm lying. I'm
sorry. Okay, I don't know.
We're going to take you at face value. It's your show.
They love us in Belize. We're huge. Anyway, you're saying one.
I mean, even before I got hired from Paizo, there were some people that tried to get together the money to take me to a science fiction convention in Peru, because apparently Pathfinder First Edition was huge in Peru. Has a blade named Sting. Has blade named Sting. Okay. So I think you can look at how do those different forces play out and how are they displayed in those two science fiction settings, Star Wars, Star Wars and Dune, and get a very different feel for what does and doesn't work in those movies. But when you're wanting to adapt things mechanically to a Starfinder game for game mechanics, all right, these memes are hysterical, but they are also more than a little distracting.
Okay, sorry.
you know, it's okay. That's, it's funny, but you know, if we want the industry folks react to memes show, that could be a different half hour show where you just click memes and we give our thoughts and laugh.
Yeah.
Who knows? It might even be popular. So I had a line of blog posts that I did pretty early on in Starfinder called Awesome 80s, where I was writing up, for example, here's a take on something that is like the glaive from Krull, and here's a thing that is like the noisy cricket from Men in Black. And yes, people will say, Men in Black isn't the 80s. Well, the comic was, so give me a break. I also wrote up the Fayette module, which is obviously a riff on the Weirding module from the Lynch Dune, that is a specific sonic weapon, which has some weird rules about how to use diplomacy or intimidation as part of your attack roll with that weapon.
Didn't I do art for that?
You did art for my Kantos, which was my glaive.
Right. Okay. You
did not for the Fayette module because, you know, it's a box you strap to your throat with a hand trigger. I figured people could work that out. I think it speaks to one of the really interesting things to me about Dune. Dune is very much a skill-driven story. There are, you know, constantly people are wanting to make diplomatic overtures and connections, and the entire, I don't want to, there are spoilers if you have no idea what happens in Dune. There have been a movie and a miniseries and a whole series of books, so I don't feel bad. But one of the whole reasons that the events set in motion is that the Emperor wants to set up Duke Atreides for a fall and has to put him in a place where he could be trapped. And therefore, he has to bait that trap with something so tempting that the Duke can't refuse it, can't give it up. And that is to take control of Arrakis, the planet Dune. But the Duke is less interested in spice, which you can make a ton of money on. Don't get him wrong. And he knows that the spice must flow. But he likes the idea that the people of Arrakis, the Fremen, desert power, keep thinking of Fayetteville, North Carolina, and having flashbacks to your 20s, hanging out at a flaming mug, that the people that survive the harsh conditions of Dune are, as a result of surviving those harsh conditions, skilled in ways that civilized man isn't. And that becomes part of the entire theme through the whole series. And I got to take an aside here. There are some really disturbing concepts about eugenics gender-based power roles and things that I think probably should not be held into a high pedestal as concepts at this point, because we've seen how a lot of those things tend to be embraced by groups that specifically try to use those ideas in a oppressive and totalitarian and racist way. So I'm not a huge fan, for example, of the fact that our main character is maybe the genetic messiah that will be able to do everything. But I do like the idea that apparently the Bene Gesserit in general can teach people skills of perception and analysis and command that aren't magic, and they're not psychic. They are such a deep understanding of how philosophy and psychology and human minds and perceptions work that you can, for example, literally pitch your voice in such a way that the part of the brain that your receiver hears bypasses the decision-making matrix and goes directly to the action part of your brain, so that you can make your voice something that people must obey. And one of the reasons I find that fascinating is that it would be, oh, look, a Fayette module. That's Jacob Art, isn't it?
That is Jacob Art.
What did you do that for?
You. That's the one I did for you.
Is it on my blog?
I hope so.
Well, if not, send it to me and it'll be there by tomorrow.
Hey, I guess Walt again is once again proving that he's my brother from another mother, because this is my same thought. Uh-huh. The way they talk about desert power and the Fremen. Walt says, this is very similar to Korra's use of Conan to show how civilized man loses as much as he gains from civilization. If you read, especially the original Howard, the way he would talk about this was something only a northern Sumerian could survive.
Right.
Which, there's just an awful lot of that.
There is. And there is a concept in Dune that Howard hits in a lot of different ways that the only way you can become your best self is through horrific suffering and adversity. So the most powerful groups are the Fremen, who specifically live on the harshest planet in the world, and the Sardaukar, who are Imperial troopers, who later in the series you learn come from an Imperial prison world, because only an Imperial prison world is brutal enough to make men who can be as tough as the Sardaukar. And I am not a fan of the idea that the best must have suffered. Paul is told to put his hand in a box to see if he has the necessary self-control to not jerk his hand out while he's feeling horrific, hand-destroying levels of pain. Because if he can't control that impulse, the Sacred Mother considers him an animal. He is only a human because he can ignore those impulses. Well, it turns out that thought it'd be chocolate. Nope, pain. Happy Valentine's Day. We have evolved to jerk our hand away from pain because pain normally comes from things that are harmful. It is perfectly reasonable if you put your hand in a box and you feel a burning sensation to jerk your hand out. I have a burn on my thumb because I tried to put a pizza in the oven and I happened to get a burning sensation. And if I had sat there going, well, as an evolved human, I am going to ignore this sense of pain so that I can prove that I am superior to the baser instinct, my thumb would have caught on fire. Instead, I jerked it away and I just have a little burn that I can fix. So in no way do I want to promote Dune as a source of a whole bunch of really positive philosophies that people should grasp and apply in their life or even hold up as a good thing. On the other hand, I kind of think that even Herbert didn't really necessarily think of them as a good thing. Clearly, he does not consider the Emperor or the Harkonnens to be good, and they are two of the most powerful groups. And the Duke, Duke Leto, believes that he has a line on how to become sufficiently powerful to face these evil oppressors, and he loses halfway through the first book. The Bene Gesserit thinks that they can breed a genetic messiah, and that doesn't go well for them. So there are a lot of really strong concepts he puts up, but he also has them be not necessarily held up by the narrative as things that should be promoted or considered positive. And then, of course, four books in, he has one of his main characters turn himself into a giant hybrid human slug. So that suggests maybe he was iffy on some of the philosophy in there. But there are still great concepts. One of the ones that works really, really well is that all of these powers are either enhanced by or can only be used by spice. Now, spice is a biological construct. It can only be found on one planet. People can't make it artificially. That kind of scarcity and necessity can also lead to interesting things specifically for your game. You can, for example, say, hey, everything's priced in UPBs. That's great, but I'm going to decide, for example, that serums can only be made from the sap of a specific plant on a specific world. And if you don't have the mine plant sap, you can't make this thing. And it's only that much worth of mine plant sap at the normal pricing. But if someone blockades the planet and the source is cut off, obviously things will become more expensive. I also think you can do something like the voice using just skills. There's already skills and feats. There's already a feat in Starfinder that allows you to use the intimidate skill to demoralize as a move action. Intimidate can also be used to get people to do you favors, and then afterwards they resent you, but it takes a fair amount of time and work to get that done. I think it would be possible, and I plan to explore it on my blog tomorrow, onkcstevens.com, to take the other things that you can do with diplomacy and with intimidate and create feats that giant Walt Robinson says giant hybrid human slug is the name of my new band. And I presume that the first album will be The Spice Must Flow. Or maybe that's the first song. Maybe that's the single. So I'm going to be looking at ways that you could create feats that say, hey, here's a specific task that diplomacy has. Maybe it's gather information. And we say that as a non-magical effect, as a state of super heightened awareness, you can spend a resolve point because you are delving deep into yourself for these skills and make a gather information check as a move action, because you can stand in a town and just listen to all the sounds and intuit all of the information you would have gotten by looking around. Or you can try and befriend someone by spending resolve, take a standard action, and you can immediately cause yourself to stand and sound and say the things that will make that person treat you as a friend, regardless of what their normal attitude towards you would be. And, you know, then you have some, you know, it's a feat cost. You have to have the skill ranks. The DCs nicely scale with the level of your opponent. And it can open up a whole list of things that your envoys, for example, might be really, really good at. We could even say, hey, it's a feat. Oh, but an envoy can take this as an envoy improvisation if they want to, so that it becomes like having bonus feats as a fighter for combat feats. And I think that's a great way to open up some very Dune feeling options for your game without having to go all the way down the rabbit hole of personal shields that create atomic weapons if you hit them with lasers.
Well, that's pretty cool. It's owencaseystevens.com is where you can find Owen's content. Is it tomorrow?
Yeah, he usually posts the stuff the day after we talk about it.
And from there, there's a link to Owen's Patreon. Even more of this cool content. Well, I think we covered this pretty thoroughly. Any closing thoughts before we wrap it up?
I'm into sandworms. You've probably never heard of them. They're pretty underground. Oh. I think Dune, like Foundation, actually, is one of the great influencers of science fiction and fantasy that don't necessarily hold up to what a modern fan will want. And I'm not trying to tell you what you will or won't like. I'm just saying that even if you're the sort of person who reads Foundation or reads Dune and thinks, why the heck did this ever become great? They were really, if you'll pardon the term, foundational when they came out. They explored ideas, they introduced tropes, and a lot of people have built things based on being inspired to those concepts or being exposed to things that other people were inspired by those concepts. So I think they are almost better as sources of study than entertainment if you're into intricate, deep world building and different ways to tell science fiction stories.
I think of it sometimes like the Velvet Underground. It's that band that all the bands that you like, we're really into them.
Yep, but you might not be.
Yeah, it might not jive with modern sensibilities, but...
Well, and in some cases, rather than modern sensibilities, right, there are things that might just honestly be bad, except that in context, they were so amazing. Pablo Picasso made a lot of art that there are legitimately reasons to look at it and go, I just don't know that that's actually great art. But the fact that he was a skilled artist who could make the art styles of his time very, very well, and then chose to go this totally different direction, opened up an entire new chapter of what master level fine art could be. And that caused things to develop that you might not like Picasso, but you might like things that only developed because of Picasso's influence.
Indeed. Like, you might not like New Kids on the Block, but you like One Direction. Sorry, that's a horrible example. Forgive me. So, Jacob, any closing thoughts, sir?
Nothing specific. I enjoyed the new Dune. I have some issues with it in comparison to, you know, the older movies and the sci-fi miniseries, but otherwise it was enjoyable and entertaining. I think people who have never seen Dune before will still find it interesting. If you've never read the books or never seen any of the previous adaptations, I still highly recommend the new movie.
And I just today saw that apparently they have greenlit part two, this being part one. So there should be at least one more Dune movie coming.
That's good to know. it's always good when it does well enough that they're going to do the sequel. Like, yeah. I was looking forward to seeing Why the Last Man. I didn't get around to it, but apparently none of people were into it, and so there's not going to be any more of that.
So there's been some conversation about that apparently being canceled regardless of what the viewership levels were, and the production team is trying to shop it around and see if they can get someone else to pick it up. But part of the problem is that Why the Last Man just took so long to get to the screen that some of its novelness, some of the things that made it so celebrated when it came out, have been expressed in other ways, maybe sometimes better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very much of its time. And I like Heinlein, but I liked Heinlein better when I read him years and years ago. And even that was, you know, after going back sometimes, especially reading the juvenile stuff, you're like, what was wrong with this dude? And you have to kind of put yourself back in the mind frame and remember when he was writing it and when he was coming out, what the attitudes were, and you know.
And even then, right, which Heinlein are you talking about? Because each time he had a different wife, he was a somewhat different Heinlein. I am a huge fan of the Starship Troopers book. I am also a huge fan of the Starship Troopers movie, which is specifically a parody and send-up and dismissal of the philosophies behind the book. But I also think that one of the great things about Starship Troopers is that we got the Forever War and John Stakely's armor because of Starship Troopers. So it's another case of this thing is worthwhile in part because of the better things people built on top of it.
Yep. Well, hey, Owen, when we pitched the show to you, we promised a fast and
tight half hour. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're at 33 minutes right now. So I will play our catchy theme song. Thank you, everyone, for checking us out. Let you know we'll be back in 2 weeks with more Owen Explains It All. Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Have a good night.